Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Stand by. Operation
This is the Toffee Web Podcast.
And here's James Tarkowski, who makes his 50th Everton Premier League appearance. And here's Calvert-Lewin teeing it up for Mikalenko. Well, a scorer last week. He battered that one with his right foot. Here at Everton on the offensive, and he's there again. Oh, this is incredible. Vitaly Mikalenko scores in successive games for Everton. Headed away as far as Garnagay, turn back for Mikalenko. Oh, so close, and put in by Decore. Mikalenko's efforts off the post, but Decore was there to turn the loose ball home. Everton's turn to apply a little bit of pressure on Crystal Palace now. Idrissa Garnagay, we're inside the final 5 minutes of the 90, and here is Idrissa Garnagay for Everton. Brilliantly finished. Well, Everton are starting and finishing this game superbly well. His first for Everton since April of 2018.
Hello Blues, it's the Toffee Web Podcast. It's the last international break of the year, and in contrast to a year ago when we Toffees were a little shell-shocked by three successive defeats, two of them in Bournemouth, Everton go into this fortnight's hiatus feeling pretty good about themselves. Saturday's dramatic win over Crystal Palace was the sixth in the last nine in all competitions. It lifts us into 14th place, which is the highest place we've been since the 29th of October last year, just before that pre-World Cup collapse. It's not always pretty, and we ride our luck at times, but Sean Dyche certainly appears to be succeeding in what he himself highlighted as the biggest priority when he came in, and that was to change the mentality at Everton. So, can we now start to look up the table, where ninth place is just 3 points away? We'll discuss it all, including the events at Selhurst Park at the weekend, and look forward to the visit after the break of Manchester United, who really aren't in a good place right now by their lofty standards. I'm joined again by Paul Trail, as well as three team members coming off the sidelines in the form of Andy Howard, Adam McCulloch and Elle Bretland. Adam, why don't we go in alphabetical order today? Your overall thoughts on the win against Palace and the state of Evertonia in general. Well, on the pitch at least.
Yeah, that's easier. That's the easier answer. A is for Adam. Okay, let's go.
There you go.
Yeah, and A is for away win. What a performance. What a crazy weird game. It was a bit like a basketball match at times in the first half. Very, very to and fro. Three goals away from home. Mykolenko causing all sorts of problems. Decore as well. Really, really positive. As you say, it's not always pretty. It's direct, but it's effective. It's enjoyable to watch because we're getting goals out of games where, as you mentioned, 12 months ago, we were obviously in a far more precarious position and also playing quite tepid, passive football apart from the odd bright spot. Whereas what we're seeing now is chances from the off. That's three games where we've scored in the first 60 seconds under Sean Dyche and starting on the front foot and starting to take chances as well. And we spent a lot of time obviously going over those really disappointing early results against the likes of Fulham and Wolves where we didn't take our chances. But you're starting to see, amidst that direct football and that kind of gung-ho approach at times with Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Decore causing problems up front and Mykolenko just swinging at balls and something happens and getting stuck into tackles as well in the opponent's area, which is great to see. But you're starting to see that little bit of cohesion and composure come into the play in the attacking third. And I think the first goal from me off really typified that, having that awareness from Mykolenko to win the ball back. Decore, who obviously was involved a lot throughout, I'm sure we'll go into greater detail in his role, but having that awareness to find Harrison, that lovely clip ball from Harrison across, which, dare I say it, if we're going back 12 months and we have Damari Gray out wide, does that ball get delivered in the same way? Do we take that chance? Maybe not. And then a fullback rampaging forwards with a bullet header. That's something, I don't know, is that Steve Watson the last time that kind of happened? And he wasn't really playing at fullback, so it doesn't really count, does it? So it's very entertaining. And most importantly, in a topsy-turvy game, we really came out on top. So yeah, as you say, breathing room ahead of an international break that we can shrug off for what it is, an international break, rather than see it as this huge gap before a big old game. We can look forward to the space in between. So yeah, I've got my dictionary out, and next in alphabetical order is Andy Howard. What did you think?
Well, we've got a team, haven't we? And that's something we haven't had for quite a while. A steady, settled team that clearly knows its role and individually and as a group. But what I love about this game more than anything, and the result more than anything, is that Everton are now in a position where everything doesn't have to be perfect to win a football match. We've gone through so much time where you think, oh my word, we're going to have to take every chance we make because we're not going to make many. Or if we make a slip up at the back, how are we going to win the game from there? And everything's had to be perfect for so long. And that's why it's been so frustrating to watch Everton, because obviously it hasn't been perfect. And this is a game where we conceded one sloppy penalty. We've given away a lead twice. We've not played particularly well. We've been, I think, outplayed a little bit in the second half, and we've come away with 3 points. And I struggle to kind of think of the last time we actually, I wouldn't say we undeservedly won the game, but we were second best at times, and we've still come out with 3 points. That's the best thing about it for me. And you look at the table now, you're talking about looking up rather than down and all that. I mean, you know, we've got twice as many points at least as anybody in the relegation zone. People bang on about Brentford being so good. Well, they're 2 points ahead of us. Chelsea are 2 points ahead of us. Wolves are apparently doing well. Well, they're a point ahead of us. People see Palace as pretty solid citizens of the Premier League these days. Well, they're only just a point ahead of us. And we're ahead of Forest and Fulham. I mean, you know, it is really we said the turning point was a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, when we could start to look up. I think that result really does cement us as one of those clubs in the middle of the pack that could quite conceivably go and finish in the top 10 or quite conceivably stay where we are in 14th. You know, obviously points deductions pending, but let's not talk about that. Let's talk about the fact that we have got ourselves into a position on the pitch where we will be, I would say, a match for anybody. I said on the group after that game, we are really average in this league now. And that in itself, I think, is wonderful.
Yeah, that's spot on. I think the word Adam used before, efficient. I think that's what this Everton team is. It's efficient that it's when it's not even at its best, it will still get results. And I think on the podcast, when Deitch was appointed, I think a few of us mentioned, you know, would it be similar to the Moyes era? And I think that that performance at Palace was very similar to the days when we had, you know, Marouane Fellaini, Tim Cahill in the team. You would go away from home, you'd have a tough battle. Everton wouldn't be amazing, but they'd more often than not go and get a result because they had that battle and quality. They had a manager who was pragmatic, a manager who, as you mentioned, Andy, a settled team. That is huge for, you know, I would say that the last 2 years, Everton have struggled because they haven't had that. They haven't had a centre-forward to rely on. They haven't had a settled centre-back pairing. And now it's just all the pieces are going together for, as you say, Andy, an average season. You know, we're not going to pull up trees, but we've got the right mixture now of, you know, just enough things are going our way, I think. And, you know, it's just massive that when you're not playing well, you know, I've still got, as a fan, you know, you might watch it and the result is all that matters. But, you know, when you're in the game and it's, you know, the Palace are pulling you back, there's some things that are still quite frustrating to witness. But on the flip side, it's like just getting results and that's all that matters. So I still think, I wouldn't say there's room for improvement as such. I think we're, in terms of progress, I think it's as good as it can be. And that, you know, massive credit to Deitch. You know, but hopefully this is the laying of the foundation to move on from the last 2 years. And then, you know, slowly but surely, Deitch and the team can just build on that. Because, you know, to have that many points on the board is just amazing. I mean, we've got 7 wins this season. It took us till March the 11th last season to get that tally. You know, and it just little things like having 5 men in the box in the first 30 seconds to attack that ball. You know, how long have we been looking and seeing that, you know, we've had Neil Maupay isolated with nobody in about 30 yards of him. We've got 3 goals on 4 occasions already this season. We did that twice last year and one of them was the Brighton game 5-1. So it just goes to show that, you know, Deitch has really pushed that team forward now to be efficient and to get those little markers and to pull us away from, you know, those sort of stats where you're thinking we're going to go down. We've now got those stats where it's like, we'll be okay. And so it's just massive progress, really.
We didn't win 7 games until March. Sorry, it took us till March to win 7 games last season. Is that right?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, you wonder how we even survived on that, don't you? Don't you? That's a very damning start. And you're right about Sean Dyche. He's I was a bit taken aback by some of the criticism after the Brighton game. Or people like, oh, why didn't we sort of see, you know, we see that out? And we're really unlucky not to win that game in the end. And some of the criticism that gets leveled at them at times, I just found myself scratching my head because the difference is night and day really from where we were. So I'm loving the way we're starting games. That's one thing. That, you know, we're really going after that early goal, and he backs himself to see the game out often. I think, you know, once we go ahead, I thought the Crystal Palace performance, I didn't think we played particularly well for a lot of the game, but we found a way to win, and that's it's great. It's not often we're able to say that we've played, you know, okay, mediocre, you'd even say not that well, and won the game. It's so rare, and I think, on balance, if you're looking at them first couple of home games when we lost to Fulham and lost to Wolves, yeah, I think certainly we deserved, you know, if you're balancing that against how we did against Crystal Palace, if you know what I mean, I think we're certainly entitled to a, you know, to a win when we didn't quite deserve it. And we certainly would have been valued for a draw at Palace. So, yeah, it was really, really made up. And they showed good battle, didn't they? Thought Tarkowski had a brilliant game, apart from that ridiculous mistake. had a brilliant game at the back. And he's really impressing me at the moment. See them working for each other all over the pitch, and it's just great. And I think Andy encapsulated it really well. Just, you're not really worried about what's below us at the moment. And it is a case of looking up and just seeing where we go. And you're right, let's not think about the any possible points deduction. What will happen with that. But certainly, you know, it's a time to look up, and it's a time to maybe think about, well, if not in the league, then why not the cup as well? Because we're in the quarterfinal of that coming up quite soon. So loads of reasons to be positive, and it's been a long time, hasn't it, since we've had that. So yeah, all smiles from me at the moment.
Yeah, I was one of the ones who was quite critical after the Brighton game, and I think it just comes back to that discussion that we were having last week. You know, Paul and the other Paul, Paul M, we were talking about this, the whole issue of possession, and if and Andy, Adam, and Elle, if you want to sort of chime in on that, just because you weren't part of the discussion, feel free. But it, I mean, it seems that on Twitter at least that the discussion has kind of devolved into this all or nothing, black or white discussion. We're either a team that hasn't, that just doesn't use the ball and has no possession and prepared to just not have it, or, you know, you have to have the ball all the time. And I think my take is that there's obviously there is a middle ground between the 80-20 split that we had against Brighton and again in the second half against Palace, and on the flip side, just passing the ball around for the sake of it. I don't think Evertonians would ever warm to that side-to-side possession football in their own half, which is why I don't think Graham Potter would ever have been a good fit at Goodison. I've seen lots of people say that he wouldn't last 5 minutes because, you know, we would just start moaning at him. Just the crowd just get it forward. I don't know if any of you saw the clip of Deitch talking to Andy Gray about his philosophy around this, but it's all very common sense and very much in keeping with, you know, the kind of the front foot football as we Blues like to see. But you could see there was a clear difference between the way that we attacked in the first half against Palace, where the players were finding each other with passes and the long balls were at least giving Dom a chance against Anderson in particular, whereas in the second half it was all very haphazard and rushed. And Pickford's distribution was terrible, which for me it has been for a while, if I'm being honest. I think he's just being a bit too... He's just trying to get the ball out too quickly sometimes, I think, and often it's just going straight down the field, often to the goalkeeper, or it's nowhere near the strikers. So in the second half, nothing was sticking up top. So there are times when, for me personally, I think you just need to simply hold the ball for a few minutes and just take the heat out of the game. And that's something we just didn't do effectively either against Brighton or against Palace. So, you know, when you take into account how open we were at times against Palace and how high that defensive line was at times, I felt we were a little lucky. And as we found out against Brighton, your luck doesn't always hold. So that's for me where my argument comes in, is if you could just keep the ball for just a little bit longer, you just reduce the amount of pressure that your defense is under, and you obviously reduce the number of chances that the opposition can have to take away your lead. But obviously, having said all of that, we've deserved some luck based on those early results at the start of the season that you mentioned, Paul. We've taken 3 points away from London for the third game in succession, and we're 14th. So all in all, happy days.
I think there's a tendency to want us to run before we can walk here. I mean, we've been through some terrible times in the last 2 years. And we are a recovering football club. Well, football team. I don't know whether the football club's actually recovering or going backwards, but the team on the field is we're in recovery here, and yes, it would be great to see us do X, Y, and Z with the ball, and you know, always have two options when we've got it on the deck, and play great forward passing football, but also you know, have more of it and all the rest of it. But that feels a long way off from the base we're starting from. And you know, the two games we've just mentioned, we got 4 points. I mean, it for me personally, I mean, this is only a personal opinion, it's much more about the product of what we're doing. I mean, I thought the Brighton game, going back to it because I wasn't on the pod that week, I thought it was a great game of football to watch, because there's two very defined teams with very defined game plans who were acting out their game plan almost to the letter. And that's what made quite a good football match, and it made quite a tight football match. Brighton couldn't, they couldn't imprint their game plan on the game enough to win it. Neither could we, but we held them, and we were as good as them at it. So, I don't know. I feel as if that stuff I get a bit tired with reading kind of, why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we doing that? That number's not high enough. I think we've just got to look at the end product. And that at the moment is points. And I just feel as if that's the bottom line.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, I know you guys, Lyndon and Paul Squared, discussed on last week's pod, but that is the important stat, isn't it? But a lot of these glamour stats like XG can be useful for context, but they can also mask what you see with your eyes, especially being at the game. And if the ball's going in the net and if chances are being created, then that's far better than a kind of passive style. And I think, I totally take your point as well, though, Lyndon, that over the course of 90 minutes, maybe ceding too much possession makes life harder for you. And that's maybe where, in other games, and Brighton was an example of that, where you will concede goals in the second half and you will be worn down and the passes will start to get looser and more tired because you're having to do so much running without the ball and make your job a little bit harder in some instances. But then I think to go back to that idea of expectation, I think in the past, the frustration's been that we've got players in the squad who, whether it's at other clubs or through past evidence, sometimes at Everton Football Club, have got the quality on the ball and the composure, and they don't really seem to know what to do with it and look disjointed. But I think what we're starting to see, and I mentioned it in the first goal, and we see it in the third goal as well, where through some consistent game time and game time together, I think you mentioned, Elle, as well, like the beauty of the players actually having time spent together, you see the likes of Decore making better decisions in the final third, having that extra touch, having that it's less rushed, it's less forced. And if we can continue to do that as the season goes on, I mean, Idrissa Gueye didn't balloon one over the bar, didn't do his kind of rugby conversion attempt. And as well, Decore, to go back to him, I think I remember saying in the away game at Brentford that probably the only player on the pitch who can play that sort of quality through ball beyond Onana is probably James Garner for the Dominic Calvert-Lewin goal. But then you've seen Decore again, growing in confidence, growing in stature. He's got a new contract as well, and his role in the team's obviously more important now, certainly than it was under Lampard. But you've seen that through regular games, he's showing the qualities that we've seen. And I think those gradual incremental changes are going to be far better than, as you say, Lyndon, the polar opposite, which would be, let's bring in a Graham Potter and let's play sort of tick-attacker, and it doesn't really work with what we've got. Let's make the gradual progress. And then I think we will see the likes of Onana and Garner, hopefully just, again, through experience. Young players as well in that position as well. I think that's another thing to bear in mind. A lot of that team's pretty young, so we've got to allow some of them to make mistakes. Braithwaite made a few mistakes in the past couple of games, but luckily not been too detrimental to us. So I think that's where the expectation has to be for where we're at now, as opposed to maybe if this was Carlo Ancelotti with, a few more transfer windows and where we were at, say, 3 years ago, we might be right to question either the style of football or the direction of a club. But given the context of the last couple of years, I think it's nice just to breathe a bit of a sigh of relief, isn't it? And also win games that we're not supposed to. So, let's enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, just to jump back in quickly, everything that you've said there is correct. And basically my point is that I'm not asking them to do anything that they cannot do, because as we saw for the third goal, we saw in the first half against Palace, and particularly we saw at Brentford when we were moving the ball around quite well, the players are capable of doing it. It's just a bit more of the composure that when we are under the cosh, when we do need to kind of manage the game a bit better, that's all I'm asking for. And I'm not asking for anything that they can't do. And I mean, El said that he doesn't see that there's much room for improvement. I see that there is actually quite a lot of room for improvement, and we're going to see it over the course of the season. The more results like that happen, and the more secure we are on the table, and obviously the longer the Deitch is there, hopefully the more there will be a much more of this composure, and you will see even more of an identity in the team, and just better football. I'm hoping I'm sure that Deitch doesn't want to be, just slinging it over the top to the goalkeeper either. He's probably tearing his hair out sometimes when Jordan Pickford does that. So yeah, and fundamentally, bottom line, we're getting results, and improving all the while. And as you said, players like Branthwaite can make their mistakes. He's not getting punished for them because we're picking up points. I mean, that's ideal situation, you know, because we're not expecting to qualify for Europe this season. As long as we stay up, we get consolidate mid-table, and all the while we're improving, then that's all you can ask for.
Lots of my opinions on Deitch are very conflicting because, honestly, Lyndon, I think there's loads of room for improvement.
Yeah.
Despite what I said earlier, because I think, where is your right, Adam, to say that, you know, Carlo Ancelotti and a few more transfer windows, if you condense the Brighton game, there were 7 minutes to go when we had 3 points. Mm. We've then got a point, and then Sean Dyche is saying after the game, it's a point gained. Now, it's a point gained if you look at the last two seasons, but with the squad we've got and the ability we've got and, you know, the approach, it shouldn't be a point gained. It was 2 points dropped for me, personally, because I was sat there at Goodison for much of the second half thinking, you need to make a change. And this is where I'm having a lot of trouble with Dyche, because there's so much that I praise him for, but there's just these little moments in games where I think I agree with you, Lyndon. It's not a case of we want them to be Brazil. We just want them to approach games in a different way when it's needed. Mm. And I don't think that Brighton side, you know, this is a Brighton side that have now gone 6 games without a victory. It's a Brighton side who had a lot of injuries, and it's a Brighton side that we were winning for 83 minutes. So for me, I'm very conflicted because, you know, I'm not being critical of him, but it's just, I think it's fair to say he's massively improved us, but Everton should have more points on the board, if that's fair. Like, he's massively improved us, but there've been times when we've dropped points, and that's not to discredit the points he's gained us. You know, he is light years ahead of Frank Lampard as a manager, but it's just a few decisions he's made in terms of, you know, for me, the Ashley Young over Nathan Patterson isn't making sense to me. But the counter argument is we're winning games of football, so it's fine. So it's very difficult that I'm sort of looking at things, and I'm sort of in a position where when the first defeat comes, I'll be able to go, told you so. And it's not like that. But it's sort of like, as you mentioned, Lyndon, we're getting the results, so yeah, it's great. But I'm just seeing things where it's like, well, because of where we've been, everybody thinks the Brighton game is a great result. Because of we create there's lots of chances, everybody thinks Wolves and Fulham is an unlucky result. Whereas for me, from what I'm watching, it's because of things the manager's doing. And as I say, I'm not being critical at all. It's just there are certain things that I think just need tweaking. And I think Everton can be, you know, firmly in mid-table then, rather than going into these games where it could go either way. So yeah, Lyndon, I probably most agree with you in terms of what you said, that, you know, you're not asking them to do things they can't do, because I think it's the home record, really. It's the fact that, you know, you've got players like James Garner and Amadou Inanna who can really get on the ball, and they're being overrun at Goodison every game. And I know the Brighton game is a different one because they've got technically very good players as well, but it's almost like the away team, he's really got it right. But the home record, it's a positive because, you know, he's got that time now and he's got that consistency in the team that he can turn that round. But, you know, it's almost like if you compare it to like Martinez, he was great at attacking, but he was rubbish at defending. It almost feels like Sean Dyche is the perfect manager on the road. But at Goodison, for me, I still feel like there's a lot to get right. So it's really interesting, and it's nice to be in that position that, you know, we are 14th. We have got points on the board, but you can see what the little tweaks that he can make to get us more. Because, you know, David Moyes is probably the most successful manager in my lifetime. And David Moyes used to do my head in every week. And I think it's probably similar that, you know, I've just got a different opinion when I'm sat there. You know, Sean Dyche is a Premier League manager with over 10 years experience. He knows what he's doing. I'm not saying that I'm right and he's wrong, but there's just little moments when it's when Brighton get the equaliser, you're like, Sean, why didn't you bring a sub on? But then when you get the 3-2 win, you think, fair play, Sean, you've got it absolutely right. So it's really interesting. And, you know, I don't want to be critical. I'm super positive. But there's just little things where I'm like, oh, can you just do that? And we could maybe have 18 points and not 14. But, you know, as long as we stay up, that is all that matters.
Yeah, that's the be all and end all, isn't it? Just being in the league at the end of the season. But yeah, I think, like, as you said about Moyes, I mean, you're never going to agree. None of us, well, I wouldn't have thought, no one's ever going to agree on everything a manager does. So everyone's always going to think, oh, I'm not sure he should be coming on, or, you know, that, you know, whatever. And that's the way it is. But I think the reason I give Sean Dyche so much of the benefit of the doubt now is just the time he's had, really. I think it's about 9.5 months or so he's been here. You know, obviously he was thrown right in at the deep end of what he had to do, and that was just survive with and then the summer, you know, that was difficult, obviously. He didn't know who he was going to be working with. And yeah, like, some of the games early in the season could have gone a bit better. But I think it's only really once the window finally shut, and even then he lost Iwobi. He lost the two players he was going to play on the right within the match, you know, just when the window closed. And obviously we got Jack Harrison in, so he hasn't had that long to work with what he's got. And I think when it's a case of saying, well, we can do better, and certainly feel we can do a lot better when we're defending a lead and when we counter, and the amount of times we sort of have a chance to counter and we just do so many dumb things with the ball, it frustrates the heck out of me. But I understand it, because I don't think he's had a lot of time to work with them players. Give him more time to do that, and give him the, and you saw this, just you see the difference winning makes in terms of confidence. You see players like they did on Saturday just do things a little bit better, i.e. Adrisigay goal. I felt we saw less opportunities to counter than maybe say the Brighton game, I thought, on Saturday, but were more effective when we did. Brighton, I thought we had so many chances when we won the ball, galloped forward and just lost it again. That's what I found really, really frustrating in that game. So hopefully that's getting better, and that's what happens with winning, mentality, confidence, but time on the training ground with a settled team. And the more he does that, you'd imagine the more that they can improve. Now, the caveat to that is it is quite a small squad. If we were to lose two players quite quickly to injury, suspension, we're really, really struggling there for numbers, aren't we? Yeah, I mean, Calvert-Lewin, if he was to go down injured, you know, be injured for a couple of months again, better was done quite well in the cameos. But you know what I mean? It's a couple of injuries away from us really struggling to find a winning formula potentially. So let's hope the sort of fitness bill continues to stay strong, because I think that's important. Just a word on Beto, actually, though. It didn't really occur to me. I was in the office yesterday, and Nevertonian there was saying to us, like, it's a bit like when Rooney was coming off the bench for Thomas Radzinski with Beto. I was like, come again? Rooney for to compare Rooney with Beto. But I get what they mean if you go back to that time, because Radzinski would run the defenders ragged, and then you'd have like this young machine Rooney coming on and just causing all sorts of havoc. And you think Beto, you saw Calvert-Lewin. He worked hard on Saturday. We barely got the ball, barely got the service, really. They didn't get much to work out. A lot of long balls up to him, not really a lot he could really do. But he probably worked the defenders pretty hard. And then on comes this pacey, unorthodox Beto. Now, you can't compare Beto to Rooney, but you can compare the sort of like the late pacey sub. You know what I mean? He's going to cause problems because he's so unorthodox. And I think the last few games, he made a big impact at Palace. Obviously, against the... they'd given up by then, really, Burnley in the cup, but came on and made an impact there. Didn't have much time at Brighton, but he's just, I think he's, everyone was really encouraged when he started, and that seems to dip a bit. He seems to be getting, in the last couple of games, hitting where he needs to be a little bit more. So, yeah, that just as it occurred to me, then thought I'd mention it. So it's that's one sort of option we got there up front. But I think that as the season wears on, particularly getting to African Nations Cup time and all that, I think that'll be the true measure of what Sean Dyche can do, because that's when his squad is really going to be tested to the limit, and I think that's when he's really going to have to find sort of solutions. While he's going well now, certainly I won't be criticising him. I just want us to sort of try and just get a bit better in them sort of counter attacking areas when we're defending a lead, because we're a goal up after 3 minutes every game now, so we're starting ahead every game. So it's it's strange, isn't it, talking about all these issues when you're bitten the hand off, you know, at any time really over the last sort of year to be where we are now. So no complaints to me really with Dyche.
It's because you can see how much better we can be and where we could actually be this season. We could, just looking at that table, how condensed it is below the top, whatever it is, top eight or nine. You know, beyond that, there's quite a sort of big clutch of clubs in there and a couple of wins, and you can actually move right to the top of it. As I say, I think if we beat United, it'll be 4 points behind them, which is a bit mad to think, really. Yeah, I think, like El said, it's not really criticism. It's just seeing what the potential is there and how much better we can actually be. You know, and if it doesn't turn out that way, if we don't improve that much on last season, but we stay up, then, you know, it's still job done. And then we obviously try and progress from there and see how we go. But it's interesting how some of those stats, when you were talking about the squad, Paul, that I think since he's had the players that he wants, this sort of core unit that we have now, since the new players came in after the transfer deadline, since Calvert-Lewin came back, we're a top half side in terms of form on the last nine games. So that's interesting.
Yeah, the form has big time coincided with Dominic being fit.
Yeah.
Big time. Like, that wouldn't be really evidential from the last game, because it wasn't perhaps his most effective game. And he's got a couple of games about scoring now, but it's certainly the impact he's made, the presence he's got. Like Andy said a few weeks ago, you forget how good a player he is, don't you, Dominic, actually, because he's been quite unavailable for a lot of this time. But that's been the big one for me, is the return of Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And I do feel, had he been available from the start of the season, a lot of them results which we are bemoaning when we could have done better here and there, I think, you know, certainly one of them two games against Wolves and Fulham would have been a win. Maybe that win against that short shift United would have been a win. I mean, that's genuinely the case. So, it is literally as simple as that for me. He's the big one, probably the most important one really for me.
I thought about something in the week when I was looking at the lineup for the Palace game, and there's nine English, or do I mean British? No, I think I mean English. Nine Englishmen in that starting 11, which is probably more than any other Premier League team, I would imagine. The only non-English starters were Mikalenko and Onana, I think. Yeah. I'm just wondering, this may be a very simplistic view. I'm just wondering, you know, even if Patterson was at right back and Ashley Young wasn't, he's clearly British English speaking as a first language. And I don't know whether that's got anything to do with the kind of the way this group is gelling. Is that too simplistic of you in this day and age, with players playing, you know, coming from all over the world to play? You know, I mean, maybe it is, but it just struck me that I can't remember an Everton team in recent times with that many English players.
You know, you look at the Burnley team; that was probably the most English, and Sean Dyche was the manager. Now Vincent Kompany has come in; that English core isn't there. So I think there's probably something in that, just in terms of communication and getting that point across, maybe. You know, it could just be coincidence, but I think there is something in that.
And obviously, I mean, Onana and Mikalenko probably speak brilliant English. I don't work with them day to day, but it's kind of, I don't know, it may make it easier if you do have a kind of an English core to the team. Like
Decore as well, so eight, but still, that's, yeah, but it's...
Oh, yeah.
But good, I think, point. As well, it's players, and I'd include the non-English players in that first 11 in this, players of a similar kind of identity who all can mix it a little bit. We spoke about, I think you mentioned, Al, those Moyes sides with Cahill and Fellaini. We've kind of got Decore, who is both Cahill and Fellaini in terms of goal scoring, nuisance up top, getting involved in the play. And Mikalenko certainly toughened up. And that's something we spoke about on the pod in previous episodes as well. And now he's chipping in with goals as well. And Onana as well can obviously mix it. So I think it's maybe less a kind of nationality thing, but more a kind of plain culture thing. There's a much clearer identity, isn't it? And I think you mentioned, Lynn, in the interview that Sean Dyche did, it's not boring football. I don't think we're watching it and thinking, oh my God, this is so tedious. This is Sam Allardyce. This is just awful to watch, but it's effective for now. But it's not that kind of dissatisfaction. I think you're right. It's more that we're seeing that there's a higher ceiling, certainly with some of these players and the team as a whole. But I really like to see Tarkowski kind of crunching into a tackle. It goes long. Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Decore are mixing it up in the box, and then it leads to some quality play. It's because it's fast. It's
mm-hmm. yeah.
I wouldn't say it's frenetic because there's some order to it. There's some kind of logic and reason to it, but you're just kind of getting to that end point a bit quicker, aren't you? So I think maybe that's what's starting to kind of emerge from that Shunnock side. I know Ashley Williams, remember him, was on Match of the Day. And I think he said something like, oh, this is a typical Sean Dyche side.
Dyche-ish, I think he said.
Dyche-ish,
he said.
Yeah. Just as good a pundit as he was a centre-back. But he said that it was very typical of a Dyche side, but I don't really ever remember Eric Peters kind of bombing on and nodding one in. So I do think Dyche is adapting his style, but I think we're right to kind of draw parallels with that Burnley side to an extent in that there was a clear, simple way of playing. And I think for players who are in recovery, to use your term, Andy, having some stability and having just very clear, simple instructions, certainly with some of them, and when we're talking, you know, the same names have kind of come up from that Palace game in terms of Decore and Mikulenko, they're really reaping the benefits of that simple, simple instruction. And yeah, that's where, yeah, I agree. There's room for improvement, and it would be nice if we could tweak it a little bit and certainly do more on the ball at times. But there's enough there at the minute to, as we've said, the fact that I'm not necessarily too worried, apart from the fact that I live here, too worried about Sheffield United's results, or too aware of them really, at this stage in the season compared to, as we say, that last international break last season, which, okay, different circumstances, but still just being a little more optimistic and looking at that next run of games in, you know, a busy as ever December coming up, and actually looking at most of the fixtures, apart from I'd probably say Man City at home, but you never know. But going into them and feeling something approaching relaxed and optimistic, that's something we'd all have bitten the hand off last year. So so that's where I'm not too worried about upsetting the apple cart and demanding Sean Dyche goes for a sort of continental style and rips up the coffee book too much.
Yeah, 100%.
Where you say, Adam, that, you know, everybody's chipping in and, you know, can all do a bit of everything, I think it's interesting to note as well where the goals have come from at the start of the season, because, you know, our strikers have got 5 goals in all competitions, our defenders have got 5 goals, and then you've got your wingers have got 3, and then your central midfielders have got 8. So that is, you know, pretty even across the 11. That, you know, it's not just that, it's great that we've got Calvert-Lewin back in the team, we've got Beto on the bench, we've got Chimiti there as well, but we're not relying on the centre-forward to get the goals. You know, we're relying on our centre-forward to knit it all together, but it's almost like the centre-forward has made everybody better in terms of an attacking sense as well, because, you know, with that focal point, Mikulenko can get into the box within 49 seconds. It's just boosted the team tenfold, I think. So as you say, Adam, you know, we've got a team of players that can do a bit of everything, and it's good that they've all stepped up to the plate and are getting goals as well.
That's the best compliment, but a good compliment I can pay Sean Dyche is that when Sheffield United got that late equaliser against Brighton the other day, I thought, oh, where are Brighton in the league then? So like, oh, you know, like, how near are we to Brighton? Rather than thinking, oh no, you know what I mean? Not a relegation rather nicking a point out of the team. You know, it's just how far away we are from that drop zone, which is just, you know, you're just not really thinking about it, are you? You know, I literally thought like, well, not far away we are from Brighton, not like, oh, crap, that's not a result we want, you know. So it's just great to think like that, and it's been forever since we fought like that, so happy days
indeed. Any gripes about VAR and the penalties that Palace did and didn't get?
I guess like Tarkovsky dangles his leg out, I suppose, and the lad sort of goes over it, but again, I'm loath to criticise players for diving too much because they all do it, but you just kind of feel that there's diving and players make males of things, and then there's diving, and I just felt like I just thought it was just beyond the point of ridiculousness. And it wasn't just the two penalties, it was the periods before, like he was flinging himself everywhere. And I thought the referee, because he was doing it, I thought the referee probably thought, well, I can't just give these every single time he does this, which is probably why I thought he made the decision to yellow card him, I think. And you could argue that was, I know the leg was there to go over, but. And then throughout the game, I found he'd foul a player and then just hit the deck himself like he'd been fouled as well. He was really, I don't know, just crossed the line a bit too much for my liking him. So, yeah, I thought, I don't know, are we getting them penalties? You know what I mean? You know, that's the gripe. And we'll always go on about lack of consistency, but it was as apparent as ever there for me. And then you could also argue about, well, why did Ashley Young get two yellows in the derby, and then this lad didn't get a second yellow? Yeah. He didn't even call a foul for the one when he fouled Garner outside the box.
No,
that was
didn't.
That was a decent chance. You know what I mean? So consistency is frustrating, but I was disappointed in Eze there. I thought like it was just a bit too much for my liking.
Yeah, I think what sums it up is the end that Eze went down is where Umar Nias was punished for deception of an official, and he's the only player I think in football history who has actually been punished for that.
I think there was one other.
I know that's going back about 6 years now, but it is.
Evertonians, don't forget, Al. We have elephant memories for this kind of stuff.
But what's disappointing is as well is where if referees and officials in the FA. Have the power to stamp this out. After Umar Nias got that punishment, I'm sure he didn't dive again. And it's just a shame that so many years after, it's still happening because there isn't that consistency. So that was the thing for me. I just thought it was quite ironic that, you know, that the end that occurs is the end where we saw an Everton player get, you know, severely punished when nobody's come close to a similar punishment. But I do think that's where the officials really let themselves down, is I think that, you know, with proper officiating, you can stamp these things out of football, and it just hasn't happened. And I just think, you know, when you've got a player like Eze with all that talent, it is a shame that he does go down like that. But fair play to him. I think he's the first player who's given Branthwaite a tough afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's so good. I think this was the first time where I thought someone's getting the better of him here, but it was good to see that he was still, you know, unfazed. You know, he stuck the foot up, but hopefully he'll learn from that. And, it's a good learning experience for him.
Yeah, and I think that's why I wasn't too angry about the decisions, because he kind of, he did the same thing twice, didn't he? Eze did, and I think one of those decisions in isolation, you'd say, That's really soft, and I did expect it to be overturned. It wasn't, but it's pretty naive defending. So it's a good lesson learned. I agree with you on Eze, by the way. I think, well, actually, I agree with both of you. I think on one hand, yeah, infuriating in terms of some of his play acting, but he was really dangerous, and I guess a lesson for us in future recruitment in terms of picking players, young hungry players up from the league below and the likes, and getting someone in who's a bit direct, because if we speak about having someone on the break, having someone like that who can really run at players is probably the one thing we could really do with, certainly off the bench, out wide. Because when we talk about that small squad, that's one area where if McNeil and Harrison are tiring, we're not really seeing a big impact off the bench, or we're moving Ashley Young further forward, and then getting to see Patterson, but not really the way we kind of imagine it. So I think that was a side note, but yeah, disappointing decisions, but not on the level of irk that I had after the derby, certainly. Although we've not had the Michael Owen, Howard, PGMOL.
Correct.
It's such a boring acronym that I've forgotten it halfway through. But yeah, that awful show yet. We've not had that treatment yet, so I'm sure later on in the year we can ignite the fume for one of those sessions. But yeah, not the worst refereeing performance, but again, just as you mentioned, Paul, it's the consistency is frustrating, or lack thereof.
Those shows usually involve the media darling clubs, so we'll have to get into the top 10 maybe before they'll even look at us.
I was both disappointed and relieved that I wasn't here for the episode that you discussed VAR a bit more length, because I absolutely despise it in all of its forms, and can talk about it at length as to why it should be scrapped completely. But I won't go there now, because we're on an upward trajectory and we're being positive this week and happy and all that kind of stuff. And actually that one, I suppose, in all, that game kind of went for us, didn't it? So let's...
And the week before when we got the offside decision against Lewis Dunk, you know, I mean, they worked in our favour and it was correct.
Maybe it's a better system than I give it credit for.
Yeah. I mean, on the penalty decisions, I thought the first one was a penalty. I thought Branthwaite put his foot out, catches him. The second one is an interesting one, depending on the angle that you look at it. So the behind the goal angle, it does look as though Branthwaite sweeps his back foot. But then when you look at it from, there was a cell phone video that someone took from the crowd, and you can actually see he leaves his foot in deliberately to get it swept. But the interesting thing then is on the third angle is you can actually see Onana catches his other leg as well. So there is a case for a penalty there. I think it was harsh to book him for diving, even though he was kind of throwing himself around. And then you're kind of left with the argument about how much contact should there be to get a penalty. You know, and that's a whole other discussion that we won't get into now. Okay, so let's finish off. We got United next, a meeting between two clubs in very different places in terms of morale, as we've been discussing. Erik ten Hag looks like he'll make it through the international break as their manager, but won't be in the dugout at Goodison because he's suspended. Not that it makes that much difference if the manager's on the touchline or not. Adam, how are we feeling about this one? I think we can feel good about our chances of compounding their misery, can't we?
I think so, yeah. As I mentioned earlier, I'm starting to look forward to these kind of games again.
Yeah.
And I think if we're talking about how we've looked promising away from Goodison, but not necessarily capitalised yet, this feels like the ideal opportunity to put that right in terms of... the opposition and being fired up for it, but also, as you mentioned, a club who, they're a bit weird, aren't they? They're just us, but a slightly kind of glossier version, richer. Really. Yeah, richer. But they're kind of, well, I really don't know what to make of them. What I would say is that the template of getting at sides early, putting them under the cosh, being direct and troubling the back four, if we can do that against that Manchester United defence, then I feel really confident about taking something from the game, because we've mentioned how important Calvert-Lewin is to that side, and he will really fancy his chances. I would at times fancy my chances against some of that back four, fellow Chesterfield lad Harry Maguire, but who on his day is a difficult opponent, I'm sure, but I feel like we have enough around Dominic Calvert-Lewin now as well. Certainly with Harrison providing that balance, certainly with Decore playing close to him. It's a system that I feel they'll see coming, but it's still very difficult to deal with. Mm-hmm. So if we can do that, if we can make the most set pieces, which we've been doing as well, if we can continue to get other players into the box at dangerous times, and we mentioned it earlier, I think it's a game where we'll expect to have less of a ball, so making more of those counter-attacking opportunities as well. Seeing more from the likes of McNeil, who has done a lot of running, but not necessarily shown as much kind of potency as he has done at other times in his Everton career. I think that'll be really important. So I'm gonna go out on a limb, and I'm gonna say we win this. I feel, woo. yeah, and that's, yeah, I don't think that's kind of pie in the sky. It feels like a winnable fixture, and part of that, it must be said, is Manchester United's dip in form. It's not just us being on an upward curve, but I look at our recent form, I look at their side, and I look at their areas of potency, and I feel like I saw that Eriksen and Højlund might be out as well, so they're less of a threat than they have been in previous years. So yeah, maybe three goals again, who knows.
Away from home, Manchester United this season have beaten Burnley by one goal, Sheffield United by one goal, and Fulham by one goal. That is it away from home in all competitions, which gives me even more confidence than I thought I had about 3 minutes ago before I saw that. That they're not great, and they've also got Galatasaray away the Wednesday after they come to Goodison. And that is, I mean, beyond all the games at the moment, I'd say that was the one they have to go and win. So I'm really confident about this. Like we've been saying, whoever I think we come up against, I think we're going to be in the game. The once we haven't definitely been in the game this season is the Villa match. Apart from that, I mean, even the Arsenal one, you could argue scoreline wise, we were in it for a long period. I'm like a bit like you. I looked at this run of games about a month ago. Was that on the pod? We had a look at the run, and you could see it both ways. All of a sudden, it was like, well, might not be too bad a run this, and we've done really well so far. And yeah, I mean, we'll be in the game. I know that much. And I think this is probably also why the Carabao Cup is quite as exciting as it is, because against anybody, we are going to be in a game of football now. And you never know. And I would fancy us to get some out of this one too. And that is, again, a bit like Adam just said, it's half because of them, but it's half because of us as well. So yes, bring them on. I mean, all of a sudden you look at fixtures and you think completely differently than what we would have, you know, you look at our next few games now and you think, well, United home, Forest away, Newcastle home, they're no great shakes at the minute. Chelsea home, Burnley away, Fulham home in the League Cup.
I would buy some great shakes, so.
That's very good. So yeah, I mean, the build up to Christmas, I expect maximum points.
I'm quietly confident, but I'd be more confident if it was at Old Trafford, because I just feel like honestly, the home and away performances are night and day for me. And I think really in that game, I remember you agreed with me, Lyndon, that with the Arsenal game, Everton shouldn't be going out that way at Goodison. You know, we should be trying to win the game. And so I hope that's what Sean Dyche does now that we've got more confidence, we've got points on the board. And as Andy and Adam have just alluded to, you know, Man United aren't doing that great this season. I hope we, you know, attack this game. I hope we really go out there and, you know, try and get that early goal as we have done and then keep at it. I wouldn't like us to go 1-0 up and then sit back again, because I think that is where, you know, as we saw against Brighton, that's where you get punished. So I think a lot of it is on the manager, really, in terms of how he approaches it. He's got more than enough to beat Manchester United. And I just think, go for it. You know, really, if we're 1-0 up, go for it. If we're 1-0 down, go for it. Don't be sort of being a bit meek about things or being a bit conservative. It's got to be one of those games, because I think that's where Goodison really comes alive, in, you know, against Manchester United. If it's 1-0, go for the second, because the crowd will be right behind you. Whereas the longer it goes on, where you sat back and you've got, you know, although they are quite a poor side, they've got some terrific players that can hurt you. And that's where Goodison can get a bit angsty. So, yeah, I think it's a good test for Dyche to see where we're at and to see where he's at with the squad, to see how proactive he is and what changes he makes to affect the game in the second half, rather than sort of clinging on as we've seen in a few of the past games at home.
Yeah, it sort of feels a bit too positive so far, so I'm just going to book that trend a little bit. Just with a little bit of a cautionary tale from last season, when we went into the Man U game at home, pretty buoyant, because I still can't believe this actually happened. We won back-to-back games on the Frank Lampard, at home to West Ham and away at Southampton. And I think before that we'd had a few draws. Well, a little bit of a run, but all right, we're on the up here. Sounds crackers now, doesn't it? Given what happened pretty much from this game, really. We went one up, didn't we? And then we just, after that, we were pretty awful, weren't we, against Man United that evening. And that was a Sunday night. And yeah, I don't know, is it just an Evertonian thing to sort of, we've seen it enough times when you just, you know, you think, yeah, we're on a bit of a roll here. Yeah, we'll take these on, and then we lose. You know what I mean? Now, obviously, I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen. I'm just there. I've just seen it so many. I just feel like I've read this book so many times that, like, it's just when, just when you think things are looking up, just when you think, oh, yeah, good time to play these, or they're away at Galatasaray, or they're on Belfort, just when you feel like, come on, we'll do it. Remember, you all remember them, weren't you? Like the Sunderland on Boxing Day, would have been 10 wins in a row or something stupid like that, and we lost to the worst team in the league. And little ones like that, beat Villa at home, and then, oh, we'll be third or something like that. And no, we draw for the all, beat Villa away, and we go top of the league. No, we lose. You know what I mean? It's so evident to sort of blow it when you expect them to sort of do it. But, you know, the way we are, it's not a case of like we lose to Man U and it's the end of the world, whereas maybe last season it might have been. So let's just see how we go. I'm just struggling to get too carried away with it. It's a bit of a tester for Dice. I agree with what Al was kind of referring to a little bit, and I find against the big teams, and I don't know if I presume Dice has kind of always done this, but it feels to me like when it's particularly away, I guess, against the big teams, he tends to sort of recoil a bit and just go to this, like, you know, let's not lose rather than let's go and have a crack at winning. I'd like to think he would also. You might ignore the fact that it's kind of Manchester United and look at it for what they are at the moment and have a good go at them and not be too conservative and not be too cautious going into the match. But I just can't help that have that little bit of angst going into this game. So I'll be a coward and give us a point in this one, and that will do.
Well, Deitch has talked about changing the story, changing the narrative. So maybe that's what he'll do. I think he will take into account the way the United are. I think he'll be telling the players, you know, this is an opportunity. And I think that this one, actually, the way that we play and they play, this one may as well be at Old Trafford, because I think we're going to approach it more like an away game. We're going to play, as you said, Adam, we'll play counter-attacking football. I think that's going to play right into our hands. And another early goal, that would be nice. Apparently, we've scored more goals in the first minute than any other side in Premier League history, which I think is a really interesting stat. Quite a few of those have been like in the last couple of years. I mean, it's obviously a good trait to have, as long as you were saying, we don't sit back and just try and absorb it for the next 89-plus minutes. But, I think we can go into it with a fair amount of confidence. It's when complacency comes in, but I think complacency comes in when you're playing a team that you are expected to beat. I think in this instance, we won't be expected to beat them even as badly as they're playing right now. We will still probably be, you know, regarded as underdogs. So I think that plays into our hands nicely. Let's finish off with our weekly question. I think this one was Paul's suggestion. Given that we're almost a third of the way through the season, who is your player of the season so far? And we can go in alphabetical order again.
That'd be me. It's actually tough, and in the fun way, not in the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
who could it be?
Tough for last season, I think, wouldn't it?
yeah, exactly, yeah. Andy Lonergan, because he didn't do anything wrong.
Blameless.
Yeah. I'll go... I know what I was going to say. Based on our conversations today, I'll go with the other option that I was going to have, because it's probably the less likely one. I'll say Dominic Calvert-Lewin, purely because, not necessarily for his own individual performances, although they've often been really good, but just how we look. I think you mentioned it, Paul, but I'm sure it's a universal feeling, but we just look so much better with him. And he's one player, even though we have got Beto in reserve, and I agree that a Beto walking into a more settled side will also cause problems. But to me, Dom is just so pivotal, not only to the results that we picked up, but going into games like this against Manchester United, I feel like we've got a goal in us. And I think you said, Al, yeah, we're spreading the goals out across the side, and that's great. But he looks really sharp, and yeah, he just makes us a better side. So I'll say Dom, but really I wanted to say Decore, but I feel like someone else will pick him. So I'll see if I was wrong to do that. Andy, who do you think? There you go.
It was one of two for me, and the other one wasn't Dominic Calvert-Lewin, so I'm not going to say the other one. I just think Abdoulaye Doucouré is in some ways such a strange footballer. And he does things in a kind of unorthodox way. But he also, in the same breath, kind of gets himself in positions and does things that no one else can do in a strange way. And it's not because he's doing Lionel Messi things. It's just because he's doing Abdoulaye Doucouré things. He's
definitely not doing Messi things.
He's Messi with a Y.
Yeah, no, he's not.
Yeah, he's very messy, isn't he?
Very good.
But I just don't think we have another player like it. I don't think there are too many other players like it, full stop. And I think all of these qualities have just come out. I mean, he's played in every single game so far this season. He's obviously scored his four goals. They've all been important goals. He is in many ways the perfect foil to what we are trying to do up front with Dominic or Beto or whatever. And I just think I chose him because also you look at where he was not so long back. And you could never have imagined he would be such a pivotal player for Everton. He tries incredibly hard. And he's just so interesting to watch. So for that reason, I've gone to Doucouré. I've really enjoyed watching him. And I think he's just so important.
Yeah, definitely. I remember tweeting about Doucouré the other month that, to quote Forrest Gump, life is like an Abdoulaye Doucouré counterattack. You never know what you're going to get. You know, he can score like a volley from 30 yards and then 2 minutes later he can't pass 5 yards. He's a really great footballer. But for me, players of the season so far is Jarrod Branthwaite, because I think he's just brought an element of composure that was really lacking in the team. And I think, you know, if Everton had signed a new centre back for 30 million who put in the displays that Branthwaite had, we'd all be raving about him. You know, who is this defender? So for me, it's Branthwaite that he's come in off the back of a successful loan, and he's just slotted in seamlessly, and he's just really improved the Everton team in a similar way to how Adam described Calvert-Lewin. You know, he's just improved that back line so much, and I think he's made Tarkowski a better defender. I think he's probably given Mikalenko confidence because Mikalenko knows that, you know, he's got that support there. And I just think he's a quality player. And I think he's one of those players that, you know, he's been at Carlisle and he's been at Everton. He's probably worked under many coaches, but I think you don't need to coach him. I think he knows what to do. He knows where to be. And I think that's massive for Everton, because without being too harsh on Michael Keane, I feel like Michael Keane needs his hand held. And I think that's added to the pressure for the likes of Tarkowski. Whereas Branthwaite, I just feel like the 11, as we've said, you know, under Deitch, that every player knows his job. And I think with Branthwaite in the team, they can all just get on with it. They know that, you know, he's a young lad, but he doesn't need that support like a Keane or a Godfrey might. So I think for me, it's him. The way he's bolstered that Everton team with just his know-how, really.
Are we doing this in true alphabetical order, Lyndon? That would be you next, unless I've got the alphabet wrong all these years.
No. You're right. I was going to defer, but those were the three that have been mentioned, with obviously the three standout candidates. I mean, Calvert-Lewin, if the question were who is the most important player, then I think Calvert-Lewin would get it, but maybe for the fact that, you know, he missed the first five games in all competitions, maybe that discounts him slightly. Branthwaite, I think, is the other one that came to mind, because he's just been, as you said, everything you just said, Al, you know, for all those reasons. But I think for me, mine is also Doucouré. Part of the fact that the journey that he has come on in the last year, I mean, quite what Lampard didn't see. Maybe it was just simply a personality issue. Who knows? But I mean, it was, given our predicament, that decision in hindsight just looks like madness. You know, and as has already been said, I mean, he pops up in the right areas. He's there it just seems to be in the right place to score really, really important goals. And perhaps the most important stat is we haven't lost when he scored. So long may that continue.
Abdoulaye Doucouré drives me mad. Some of the things he does is absolutely are so maddening. But how can you be so mad at a player who makes so many positive contributions to your team? It's absolutely mad. And Blanfway, I think it's a very fair call to say he's been our best player this season so far too. I feel mine's his partner actually, and I mentioned a little bit earlier, James Kharkovsky. I just feel he's. I thought the first couple of games, and yeah, you're probably right, Al. Actually, it's playing alongside Jared Bamford's probably brought the best out of him. I thought he started the season off quite poorly first couple of games. I know we're only 12 games in, but I think since he's worked alongside Jared, I feel he's probably helped Jared a little bit. As you say, Jared probably doesn't need all that help, but I think it's he's still a young player. He's probably nurturing along a little bit, and I feel he's really picked up big time. Tarkovsky and. One in performance, so that he made that wild mistake the other day, which I still can't quite understand. But other than that, I just think he's been absolutely fantastic, and he's captained as well. He's been, you know, he's been quick to speak to referees when he's not happy about something. He's been quick to sort of have a go at protect their own players and have a go at others. So he's doing a good job as captain. Scored a good goal as well at Brentford, of course, which was important for the win. And just all around, yeah, I just think he's really cut. I mean, he had a good season last year, but he's really, to me, kicked on another level, I feel, this season. So that'd be my shot so far, James Kharkovsky.
And there's others in there as well, isn't there? That's the nice thing. There's others who we've not mentioned, like James Garner. I think certainly Mykolenko, in terms of the improvement we've seen, would be another one who'd be right up there, certainly in terms of his contributions. But yeah, it's nice to have a choice to pick from.
Yeah, I mean, Onana's played well as well.
Can I just add as well, the way Paul described Doucouré is exactly how I feel about Deitch. That's exactly that you've just the way I went on before going, I'm being positive and I'm not being critical. He does my head in, but you know, he does so many positive things.
Yeah, very true. All right. Well, thanks as always, fellas. It's nice to be feeling upbeat for a change rather than fretting about where the points are going to come from. We're still awaiting the outcome, obviously, of this independent commission, the verdict from which could come any day now, I suppose. And if something of significance happens between now and the game against United, we might be back before then. If not, we'll return in a couple of weeks' time to review the game against United. So all the best until then, and up the mid-table toffees.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.